Good morning, honorable members and ladies and gentlemen. We now start with our meeting. Honorable members, you will remember that in terms of our program, we're supposed to have a casual control board, the boat, and AMSCO. AMSCO has appointed a new CEO. They are just orientating a few. They requested that we must reschedule their meeting for next week. So we will do AMSCO next week on Wednesday. And today we will do the capital control box. And my name is Melissa Mutimela, chairperson of the portfolio committee. Can we have members introduce themselves? Thank you very much. Can you introduce yourself? Castle Control Board, we are going to start with you and you are going to be passed the first presentation. General?
Thank you.
Now you say you are a representative of the minister. What does that mean?
The minister has two slots on the cultural control board. I'm one and Edward Mitchell is one.
So you represent the minister in the cultural control board?
Yes,
not in this meeting?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, we go straight to you, General. Just take us through to your strategic plan and your performance plan and the budget allocation. How we meet our government priorities and other priorities. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and welcome on behalf of the Control Board. I would like to express our sincere gratitude for the opportunity to present to our presentation is history, and we are going to follow the process whereby I'm going to present the strategic plan on behalf of the board, and then the CEO, Mr. Calvin, will present the performance plan, and the chief of logistics, the general Barker, will address the issues we have since the operational plan presentation, which is the solution and maintenance of the hustle and some of the challenges with respect to of the puzzles. And in that session, several things came about, and the first one being the need for the power to have a full control over the entire prison and manage the prison as one. And I would indicate that around some of the shortcomings within the act, which are not supporting the cause to exercise that particular control within the prison. And there was a need to review and amend and send in the funding foundation of the legislation to empower the community to address their part and then to develop the position the castle has seen at the state side with natural UNESCO work of the state castle. That's one of the directives we will have given to the management of the castle that would like within the short term to qualify as a national heritage site and also a world heritage site according to the requirements of the UNESCO. The fourth one is about the drive for sustainability. This is an issue we have been working on for sure. You mentioned, Honourable Chair, that the budget allocation, we have not allocated any budget from the past, but the Council has relied on its own resources, on its own operation to sustain itself. The fifth one is the article of those countries to be the whole country and provide leadership in the contemporary countries today, come from the Department of the Ministry of Defense at the capital. This is what we need in conjunction with the office of the Honorable Deputy Minister of the Military of Defense and Military Veterans. The capital has been automatic. Market the hustle to all South Africans. This is the one area which the CEO will expand on it. Some of the attempts by the management to market hustle, the thinking to take the hustle to the people and the people bring them over to the hustle. And of course, the last part is the safety and security of the hustle, the business house, and the others. This is the vision of the castle being established as a global civic and truly accessible center that showcases South Africa's shared heritage. And on that one, I would like also to take this opportunity that on behalf of the board, we are also joining the presidency and the government in condemning the shared of xenophobia, which is an outrage in our country. And Eurosphysic covered that this is one of the objectives and the values of the castle, that it will be the sanctuary of peace, justice, and reconciliation. And with the present or the current stage of xenophobia in the country, we feel that the castle has a role to play, and hence we are affirming ourselves that we are supporting the call. We are affirming the call by the president that we must really show and protect the castle as also one of the entities in the forefront in combating this problem. The castle strategic objectives are spelled out in the Castle Management Act. There are three, with the first one is to preserve and protect the military and territorial integrity of the castle of Europe, to optimize the tourism for the impact of the castle, and thirdly, to optimize the accessibility to the castle by the public. And the board said that it would be necessary, and one of our leaders' responsibilities that we add to the fourth one, is transversal in all the state entities, which is to ensure that we can do our operation hand over to the CEO, Mr. Bukhari, who will now deal with the annual settlement plan, which is more detailing the strategic plan of the board.
My citizen and liberal citizen and members, and thanks for this. And I think that, innovative because the chairperson is not with us, and the driver of the slide, but I think it's a bit far away. Mm-hmm. So, what we've done, you have seen our submitted annual performance plan, our strategic plan. So, what I'm looking at here is just the major challenges and opportunities out of that plan related to both corporate governance and to our personal performance. So, that when you monitor us from our oversight point of view, and we meet again in October to report back on this, it is clear understanding that we are smart, the objectives are smart, the deliverables are attainable, and they are not set too unrealistic, but we're really testing ourselves. Yeah. Thanks. Is that the cover of the annual performance plan? The operational challenge from a management point of view is the is the lack of a consolidated permanent management structure, and that will be addressed in the second week of May, where the department directors for integrated management systems will come down for a 3-day workshop to really look at our structure in relation to the objectives and the vision of the section spelled out, and to look at how do we have a consolidated structure that can deliver in terms of the key strategic priorities that the section has spelled out to us. The second challenge in the council is looking on this lack of transformation of the general environment, the LPC economy that we are operating in. If you look at procurement as a council, if you look at where the expertise lies, it's in the hands of a few companies, and we know the complexity of those companies, so that we often struggle to get a gun or cannon restored from PI community or companies. So we are kept right in the middle of that imperative for transformation in the economy, but also of the skills that deal with that. But there are rules from OPAR and from the ministry to deal with that. Then the fragmentation of the carbon space that Daniel was talking about and how it undermines our ability to implement our particular theoretical philosophy of transformation, of inclusion, of nation building. The fourth one is we often are up against what I would say conservative conservation based lobby groups that are telling us that this is a typical way, this one can't be 350 years ago, you can't put the lift in here, you can't put the ramp in here, and then we're telling them that, there are places in Europe and China four times over than us, and they've dealt with that. So let's look at that. There is conflicting perception on carbon, what it represents from a historical point of view and both today, and how that influences our ability to deliver what the board and the broader community expect from us and stakeholders expect from us. And then the real cost of conservation management, because the general was talking about that we don't get direct funding from sisters. But if it wasn't for the for Cyril sitting next to me and for the department investing in the renovation and in the maintenance of the castle, the real cost would be closer, if you look how much, it's about 7 million, the real cost will be close to 20 million per annum. And then there's obviously the safety security issue that we will elaborate again, Shiva and I will elaborate again in the next slide. The operational game changers for us, and again the chairman has highlighted some of these. It's unprecedented community and stakeholder buy-in, especially with the Deputy Minister for Policy Veterans meeting with and using the castle and showcasing the castle, and really getting all people that either to felt excluded from the castle to convene at the castle to have this typical debate at the castle. The second operational game change for us is the opportunities that will come with consolidation of the spaces. We get kind of management control over the parkades, over all the courtyards, over all the buildings. It will open up not only commercial opportunities, but also heritage opportunities for us and cultural opportunities for us. Then the third one is very important, and some of you might have visited the castle recently and see the scaffolding and workmen in hard helmets.
Walking up and down.
the 130-year liberation is really offering us a huge opportunity because it's happening right in social media and connectivity and fiber optic cabling is running through us. So it's really a matter of us really changing the game in terms of what we can offer now that we will have full room for access to internet, etc. So that's we're very excited about that. And then again, some of you might have circumvented the cloud at night and we'll see that it changes from, what did I say, 1.2 million color options that we can now have the external walls of the cloud at night. And from a significance point of view, it's important to us because the world ain't there with the edge. And race change so we can make the cloud at night pink. And world environment there, we make it green. On oceans week, we can make it blue. So it really is the first, I believe it's the first in South Africa. So we're very thankful to sponsors who came on board to illuminate and change the perceptions of the cloud from a very physical point of view. Then the permanent day-to-day preventative measures for the intervention of the two generals sitting next to me. We now, from the beginning of the middle of last financial year, we have the South African Defence Force work regiment on board. So if we need plumbing, we can just call on it and they come. If we need carpet this, they can come away. And we have calculated safety in the past one probably save 100 something in labor simply because of this intervention from Chief Locke and from the chairperson. And then penultimate point, I won't elaborate, but the next coordinated site we engage the stakeholders, international stakeholders, they help us to almost coordinate this process. It's a long process of significant enlisting, but we try to really fast track how we enlist the UNESCO World Heritage Status, because what we offer is we don't need a separate listing, because we are in a World Heritage Status already, or within two, Robben Island and the Table Mountain, Internet Heritage Status, so it will be a secondary listing, so we hope to push that further. And then the reimagining of the cultural space and institution. Many of the Koi and San and Kosa and Guni people that we are is looking for a place where we talk about these words of nation building and reflection and education, but we have identified a space which we call the cultural chapel as a space that we want to reimagine and transform into a place where people can have peace and quiet. And what we just last point there, what we want to do is also there is no an African continent, no institute for African global history studies. We have a small resource center there that we, with the collaboration of Stellenbosch, UCD, UWC and CQT, we could start a center. We only give physical space for that, because you can do all of that online. Then just quickly, I'll get to the document that is in front of you. Our program outcomes are basically four, which go in shortly and cloud administration and corporate governance, and we have specific outcomes and targets in terms of that, is to ensure the maintenance, prevention, interpretation, and location of the history of the castle, and we have three very key particular measurables to deal with that. The third one is to maximize the tourism potential of the castle, and the last one is to increase public access and to the castle of Budo, and I've listed some of that. This study is just a summary of what we said in terms of the budget, what we've spent over the MPF for the past 5 years and what we plan to spend into the 3 years. So we've really moved from an organization that spent about 3 million 3 years ago to one that is fully running about 7.5, around about 7 million per annum on progress. The next slide is the budget summary, and here we've always here to help me out, but that's in terms of our revenue that we generate, the income that we get, and again be mindful of what the chairman has said, we don't get money direct from the first place, but we do have a accumulated surplus with the executive authority and the national treasury has helped us to see how we account for that and how we deal with that. So we're looking at a budget that's working on which. We can flip through that, but you will remember, chairman and honorable members, that third column. A couple of years ago, we had some AD findings on articulated. So now, with a lot of your inputs and your comments in the past, we are now, I think, 99% sure that our performance indicators are smartly articulated. we have had an external or internal auditors look at that as a benchmarking, and I am confident that in terms of smart, in terms of machine input available, in terms of that, we are there, and then we will have easier to look this year for that to look at the audit finding or the management finding. Heritage program, there are heritage programs and with key targets. The tourism one, I just want to check on the next one, which is the tourism one. Because the tourism one are also the ones that National Trade has asked us to look over a long period, over 70 years that they were tracked. In other words, we selected performance indicators that they tracked for national expenditure purposes. So that's why I want to highlight this number. That we looked at historical figures, we looked at what are the interventions that we can put in place after, and looking at the preliminary figures that Ryan gave you this year, we are on track in terms of both the total number of visitors to our site and the gross revenue generated by the visitors coming up to us. Thanks. And the heritage one is very important to us because that's opening up and like a general test, bringing people to the castle, but also taking the castle to the people through marketing programs, through public awareness, through school programs. So the castle, that the general public, the 50 million or what are we now, 1 million South Africans, all the colleges and control at the castle as part of our state. And I'm so glad that history will not be raised as a compulsory subject, because part of the, if you look at the interviews around this xenophobia thing, is that we just too quickly, after 21 years, forgot where we're coming from. And if we use that as our fuel, we will be able to have conceptual tools to deal with when we are being confronted with the difficult day-to-day survival issues, or what we call the politics of the stomach. We can move on to... Yeah, this is in your briefing, you asked us to report on two other things. It's the renovations project, or refurbishment project, and then the crime project. So I don't know what the Chief of quickly wants to look at, and then I will just come in.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chief, members of the committee. I'll just give you a brief progress on the restoration of the castle, as described by as it was recommended by the committee. The PV company is currently on site doing renovations, and the project is registered at Western Cape Department of Defense and Military Veterans, Cape Town, the Castle Repairs and Maintenance. Reference number represents the PV company project approval, meaning that the project has been approved by the PV company. Just a short background on description of the project. The restoration of the castle took place in phases over a period of 82 years. And since the completion thereof in the late 1990s, the lack of proper maintenance resulted in the deterioration of the buildings. The work currently being done with us is an issue to repair, which implies that no changes will be made to the current structure of the facilities. The contractor appointed is GZKTR Zama Construction, which started on the 4th of December 2014. It's a level 4 EE rating with 8 GD. Which means several building specialists in heritage building CID directive, which actually means that it's qualified to restore heritage structures and buildings as prescribed by government. The project finance tender awarded is 108.6 million. Practical completion date is the 3rd of September 2016. We estimate that the date might come up maybe delayed to the 15th of December 2016. We have got a team of our regional works in the Western Cape. We've got 9 of these teams in the country, which is located in all the provinces, which have assisted us in reducing the cost, doing over and above jobs that are out of what the contractors are doing. This has actually helped us in reducing the cost that we could have incurred as country.
With that,
before we get our last slide, the 10th slide deals with the crime and vagrancy issue. I Chief Lord Premier Philip Moore also here, who's the OC of the province. So they are, since our last meeting, there's been very positive moves to deal with this issue in a transitional way. But there's a permanent solution that's also coming, because we now have agreement with the city that we can in fact fence this area where the underbridge, where the homeless people are not only endangering the infrastructure, because they're making fire under the bridge, and so they both weaken the infrastructure, but there will also be the incident of heavy crime around the Strand Street area, opposite the station is underway. So they are almost underway. It is in a procurement process, so that once that is done, we will give you an update on all you will consistently see, but will be the more permanent solution to deal with the vagrant issue around the castle. Summarize it. So thank you from our element, and if you want to say something, thank you for the committee. This was when you had your committee meeting last year, and the best way to get you working together is to be on the Bonkika in the back of the day. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. You're done, Janela. Thank you very much. Normally, we don't, when we deal with the state-owned enterprises, it's rare to hear that you are self-sustained. You always get allocation from the department. So it's very exceptional that you don't get that you are self-sustained. Honourable Member, can you interact with the presentation? Honourable Islam, Honourable Bongo, thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Good day to all the members, and also the council board, and also the particular members. Chair, I'd like to raise the issue first and foremost, I think the most fundamental issue that, of course, occupies us when it comes to the cost of wood sustainability. Now, we've looked at the program, and you know, just the maintenance program, clearly the reference being made to the short description of the current one, which is 108 million or 7 million, there's reference to 32 years of maintenance that was done and stopped in the 1980s, and now the department again is in the air, Defense Department that put in, we know, over the last 4 or 5 years, also this amount of money, and it was 50 and it was 52 million again afterwards. Now, in terms of the normal arrangement for this for maintenance of buildings, one looks at a margin of 1.5% of asset value that must be set aside on an annual basis for the regular maintenance of any asset. Now, I don't see in the short term or in the medium term that the cost can be totally self-sustainable if it is not for the Defense Department to actually come in and also contribute to maintenance of that heritage site. So I think this is important, and if we want to elevate the heritage sites to United, to the UNESCO World Heritage Site, what are the implications, what are the demands when one is actually categorized in that group of international heritage sites? What are the financial implications, and what's expected of the institution to sustain that status of the World Heritage Site? So one is the sustainability. The maintenance I don't need, because there's no allocation of an annual maintenance plan or contingency available from the CCB itself, and depends entirely on the Defense Department to do that. Now this brings into question the issue of commercialization. The commercialization, you have to have more details of all the products and programs that will actually generate the money that the CCB sees that in the future as the means to sustain all those activities and programs. Now, the commercialization program also involves the management of all the spaces in the castle. And I'd like to know what program has been put in place to negotiate through that and to be able to find one management that will take total responsibility of the castle, although there will be SLAs or MOUs with other stakeholders in the castle that and the use of it. If that has been thought through, is there a plan, what are the projections on it, how does the CCB actually envisage commercializing using the management tool in getting that money raised? We don't see figures yet. I know the intention is very good. So the issue of the commercialization we'd like to know. Then there was a serious program underway, which is the CMP, the ICMP, the Integrated Conservation Management Plan. That one, as you see, OC, at this stage, well, it's minimal, but the actual implication is 20 million per annum. Now that is a huge jump from a budget of 7.5 to, I mean, that's jumping very big. So I would like to know if all these things have been looked at holistically, the commercialization, the management, the conservation plan, all these things have been put together to make a feasible project to undertake and to say that, yes, we can be sustainable in so many years. It cannot be the short term, it cannot be the medium term, it will take much longer. The other one I'd like to raise is, of course, the number of tourists is, of course, escalating this year by over just over 2,000. And the implication in the one report, if I read the APP, it says there aren't really a serious implication for the tourists. And in the other report, it says, yes, it will impact on the tourists. Now, I would like to know the exact status. The tourists are being increased, but the restoration that's taking place will have an impact on the movement of tourists in that on the site. Will that reduce the numbers? Or will it also applicate certain of the offerings that is being done of the different tours? Will that also be hampered? How does this impact on the tours really come in access to the cost? Then I'd like to raise the issue of the work regimen. I'm really happy about that. That there's been a discussion on the other side of the fence and also using the military base and using others. Slow shedding. Thank you. Yes. So the other one is, of course, that we are happy with the US regiment coming in, and of course that is all funded by the Defense Department, which means even the small maintenance issues, it's not being done by the CCB, it's actually done by defense. So it's not only the major restoration, but also the minor maintenance issues. So I just wanted to bear that in mind. I also want to acknowledge the role of the council in the xenophobia, and I think there should be programs that rolled out almost immediately to deal with those issues. Before they become also widespread or a serious concern in the Western Cape in particular, because it's located here. I think it's been assigned to many of the different ethnic groups and race groups and historical space within the Western Cape, but that space being used effectively. We need to overcome those discriminatory and racist and sick attitudes within our society. I want to move on then to the HR. The HR is one of the concerns, and here we've got two issues, Honourable Chair. The one is that the surplus money of 13.9 million. Initially, the discussion was about critical positions that had to be filled in order to look at the commercialization and optimizing the marketing plan so that money can be generated. However, I find within the APP, the plan is also allocating that money from 2015-16 financial year to 2019-20, and that is spread out concerning the surplus funds, which is heritage maintenance, development of conservation management plan, development of new heritage tourism products, refurbishing and outsourcing the Couvenir restaurant and the Castle Chapel, and the correspondent museum exhibitions and other things, and of course the World Heritage Status, and expansion of conference and events facilities. This is specifically to do with the infrastructure development of the Institute of the Castle itself, and also the conservation management plan. I'm looking at the critical positions mentioned of the heritage office, of the three mentioned, and besides the three, there were also cleaners that are now going to be introduced and others that has already been accommodated in the current budget of about 1 million. So I want to know also, how is this compared to the infrastructure development taking place with surplus fund and the vision of using the surplus fund to actually appoint critical people for positions for people to optimize the commercialization of the castle? How is that to be managed? The other one I'd like to also say is that we have a discussion on page 44 of the APP on the consultants. There are different rates being offered. People earn between 1,500 up to 6,000 per day. So I'd like to know the tender process that has been followed in that regard, the expertise and also the agreement that has been drafted for the consultants, particularly their specialized skills, if that will also be transferred to the current staff that are responsible for those particular areas, if that has been made an essential part of the consultants. I think that is government and treasury's directive There have been much transfer of skills by consultants so that we do not say permanently dependent on consultants, but we find the in-house skills base that can continue with the work and does not therefore strain the budget of a particular department. So I'd like to know the issue of the consultants and how that was done and the cost attached to it. Some are minimal and some are quite expensive per day. The 350 acceleration, I think we will can possibly fix some program and project to be put in place, how it's going to be conducted, how everybody's been incorporated into that, when that event is going to take place, and of course in any way that the committee can assist in anything, and we'd like to also concentrate in those other events which are very important in the history of this country and also going into the future. The other one is issue I want to raise is also the game changes we discussed. I'm quite interested in the Center for African Colonial Studies and also currently one negotiation that is in place with other institutions and also the universities that are also interested in this particular area and also internationally. I think you've leaned on the Dutch and the British for support and for support, the lighting support with Philips of Africa. In this case, the colonial studies, I think it's important that we get that perspective of history correct, and there is an opportunity to use the culture for that purpose. So just some further elaboration on that, Honorable Chair. The public access, that was very interesting for me, that your hits have increased from a few thousand to 10 million. And you said there is evidence of the service that has been done. Maybe just to appraise the committee, it would be welcome if we can have an idea of who are actually those server call takers and actually providing that necessary information as evidence, because if that is the case, we can probably advise other, like the military veterans department, to also make use of this type of marketing at a minimal cost. Because at this moment, it's a headache and a possible problem, and military veterans are not really informed in this country about corporate developments. So I think we'd like to benefit from your experience and what you've done in that regard to achieve a 10 million hit. Thank you very much, Archie.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sal. Honorable Bongo, you have all the time.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you for the presentation. I think I'm starting by thanking the board, the CEO, for what a good work that the Deaf Committee. I think it's a committee who has not seen that very much. Very good work that has been put to say that there's a good work that has been done by the control boards. And mine would just was an interest on a few aspects. Part of what we need to do is to revolutionize the whole the castle. And what we'd like to see more is to bring in the military veterans, because I think we're in the same department. So the extent to which we expect us, the military veterans to get opportunities either of doing maintenance itself or of participating in this work, because in the military phase, we will not finish it more than that, but let's say. And the second point, what is the program around the endowment purposes? What is the program that what are the plans that are there? I think those are the two points that I want to raise, but of importance is that we need to think of the good work that they are continuing to do. I'm taking that as a comment.
Hello, Honorable Bob. Honorable Kameka.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, 30 hours of life while you spend some time at work. You don't have to appreciate and congratulate a fish for swimming. That's its job, it has got to do. So the same applies to the board of the country control. So it has got that's its job, it has got to manage affairs as they are managing them. The question that was heard is, talking of transformation and the maintenance and repair, now how are HDIs and FMMTs basically changed from both the maintenance and repair? Such as this figure, and the big pie to be changed by one person. Secondly, to refer to actual ability of the hacker. If not, why not? The contract is still there for some time to go. It doesn't talk to that. I think it must be an issue. And thirdly, do you think the MDF work program could be equal to the task of doing this job? The whole job, not the private individual. Another question would be, what has been achieved by the board in terms of transformation? Have I seen its inception? The last question would be, what and how does the castle benefit from the presence of other structures, like Inigo and all those people that are there? Does it have any impact on relationships and authority? And what the way forward. That a national property there, which is held by the FNDS on behalf of the council. We still have that authority. And how to maintain that ownership?
Thank you very much. We are not going back, going to come back. Is why I give honorable members and ample time to address their question. In your answer, you should also advise, because I see in your challenges, you have problems with transformation. In my answer, you must also advise us to how do you see this going to help you in terms of transformation. Thank you very much. Over to you, General.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairman, members of the committee. I think the way we are going to approach the response to the questions is that I'll just listen and just indicate my solicitation to the table for responding to that. On the issue of the legislative framework, I'll deal with that one, and the communalization of the hassles that the project, the CEO will address that, and then on the population management plan, I'll address that from the board perspective. On tourism and the renovation, I think the CEO will address that. And then on the surplus fund, I'll address that issue. On the issue of consultants, the CEO will address that. And then on the trans 50-year regulation, the CEO will also address that. And then the center for colonial studies, the CEO will address that one. And then the involvement of the military veterans, because of the decline in CILOC and the minister, you will address that one. And the endowment properties, the plans, also CILOC will address that one. The issue of complying with FDI and SMMT against CILOC and the CEO will address that, and accessibility, the CEO will address that. The involvement of the world regiment, whether they are going to meet the challenge CILOC will address that, and how does the public benefit from other other stakeholders outside that part from the board perspective. I think the first thing which honorable chairman was also for me, I must draw your attention to, which is where your role has to be really appreciated, is the issue of the disalignment or the mismatch of the legislation that this is framework of the hassle. And it was the hassle management act, which I think the author at that time in 1993 had certain objectives when they developed that the management act. And some of those objectives might have been overtaken by events, especially at the government framework there, for instance, the PFMA. The PFMA, that's one of the conflicts in the act. The PFMA demands from the current authority that there and the other structures within the department, yeah, from the people of the district. viewed the Housing Management Act, we would like to see all of CG Corp, I think the CT, SARA, almost equal what is would have been done in the business in terms of the project with respect to our community. Now that could serve the issue of run of the castle by the pots in a little bit of from jeopardy, because we don't have full control of the pot to run the castle as a business. We've got other role players see all this part of the pot, and there was professor within the castle, and we've got the military, we've got the reserve force elements, and all of that are not properly pronounced as to how to manage them. And the board, for all these aims and objectives on how to improve the efficiency within the castle, how to optimize the potential of the castle and the current destination, but without that control over the castle, which in fact is defined by the specification of the framework, we find our hands a little bit high. Hence, in one of strategic priorities in the last session, wanted to relook at what we are presently with the ministry at some of the amendments in the legislation. And that is sort of assists empowering the board effectively manage the process. And when it comes to transformation of the board as an entity, as one of the members indicated here, the minister can appoint there are four members who are directly appointed from the ministry, the chairperson, the two additional members, and then the officer commanding of the support space, in the same case, who's a member of the future board, automatically he is a member of the board. And then the rest of the members are appointed by other stakeholders. But I have from the start, since 7 years ago, that I've never interacted with those stakeholders. I've never seen them in person. So all the time, whereby it was an audit period as to whether have we appointed all the members that they've been appointed in the board. And we were struggling to get some of those people appointed to the board, because it was not a priority to some of the stakeholders and entities. Now that the mismatch between trying to implement the legislation, we feel that we have to really know as to whether it is aligned to the spirit and the aspiration of current government and national leasing objectives, and the fact that there's a special mark, the answer is no, and the other two to look at, I do want to make that to exploit the potential of the castle. I think we have to be quite a legislative framework. That's one thing. And to also ensure that we want to pursue the issue of corporate governance again, we have to relook the legislative framework. That's the solution to the challenges in the legislative framework. With regards to the integrated conservation management plan, it has been a decision of the audit. It is a requirement that when you are managing a dedicated site, that you must have that plan in place. For instance, a very good example is that the number of tourists or the number of people visiting the castle must balance with the structures of the castle. You cannot have, for instance, 20,000 people visiting the castle. You can destroy the structures of the castle. And that is set out if we have a plan. If we do our revenue listing projections and what, who or how many people want to attract, it must be guided by this plan. And you are going to develop and present it to the maintenance plan, which has not been there in the past, and the name of the maintenance plan, that must be directed by the plan. So it's a must, it's managed at the level of the board. And the issue of the resources, the presence of resources, any problem type the development of this community, one of our major objectives in our plan. And hence, we can relate this to the issue of the surplus. As I don't remember, I appreciated that, why are we not using the surplus on HR? Because the people decision by the post that we're not going to use the surplus funds on HR. Because HR is more operational as the expenses. But the surplus must be focused on investing in areas which are going to maintain and generate revenues for the customers in the long term. Hence, most of the when we presented our different surplus is motivated to maintain the surplus to treasure. One of the issues is that we are going to ensure that we use the surplus on ensuring that we invest on the programs of process which are going to benefit the customer of which the preservation management is one of them. We are hoping that we see that if we manage our things very well, we will be able to make our business of data from our operation as well. That's the decision because taken by the board. And I think, and on the trend, the celebration is definitely what we're going to consult with all the stakeholders. In fact, that must be chosen at the highest level. The committee will be contacted with that one because we think this is one of the milestones in the interest and their own the stakeholders. In fact, we are going to work on the strategy engaged with the ministry. That it must be driven from that. We are going to ensure that we have the things that are appropriate. So I think there will be consultation that we do the committee in terms of the presentation for the service of the celebration of the officer of the castle. In terms of the benefits from other stakeholders, the major benefits we get from other stakeholders within the board is the effectiveness. Most of the board members coming from the other existing organizations, the experience and knowledge they have on the heritage of their management, they contribute a lot. Some of the issues we have mentioned in terms of management comes from those entities. They specialize, the time that they do specialize on it. That's what we benefit from them. But we feel that the balance of they are being appointed into the board and to provide better to be in line with the proposition they need in terms of their expertise. As we see that now, that is not properly defined and it's very easy to touch the situation whereby we cannot smoothly operate our operations very well. I'll hand over to my colleagues to respond to other questions. Thank
you very much. Honourable Chair, members of the committee. Coming to the issue of the involvement of military vets in projects around the country, perhaps I should indicate that the security is reinstructed by the Deputy Minister in order to increase our engagement with the military vets. I can confidently report that we are engaging with the military vets in a number of respects. Outside the castle is just one of the projects that we will be creating. Plans are in place. One to without committing myself in the next sitting, we will be able to report to the committee that things are happening. We were very unfortunate in a sense that with the current project that is taking place in the castle, this project was managed by the Department of Public Works, which is outside of our control process. That is how we invested in this case. But we are looking at other plans where we can perhaps increase the volume of the management of the customer. Coming to the issue of endowment properties, we've got about 55, probably even more endowment properties that are scattered around the country. We had a number of meetings with the Department of Public Works. A memorandum of understanding has been completed, the minister has signed, let us say from the outside to say, what about the inner city as well? We can contribute to the report to the community. All endowment property, that is registered under the department of the The involvement of the regional works unit, it takes on, it indicates that we've got 9 regional works units that are located in different provinces, and they are doing a number of things. The regional works formation is still a developing structure. Training members in the construction environment takes about 4 years, but we have already undertaken certain projects, which is first and second line maintenance. That is the thing I Given the renovation of the current projects, the renovation projects that are taking place in the Castle of Bremen, it costs a lot of money. But once the regional works unit is up and running, it's going to be less costly. Okay, I think that's about all from the
Chairperson, and honorable members. I will deal with the surface of the questions in some kind of systematic way. And I was referring in the significance of the castle, the brick and mortar. The castle is much more than the brick and mortar, and maybe we'll understand the necessary tension between commercialization and the draft of the sustainability and what it represents or what it means. So when honorable member raised the issue of the slip in of celebration of 150 years, we were certain circumspection, because in our engagement planning for next year's marking of the 350 years, we were reflecting back on the 300 years and 200 years and all of those documents that we have, and how the very essence of what the castle presents to people today was not funded in those previous commemorations or celebrations or whatever they call it. And how it's necessary to look at the castle as a site of memory, as a site where the majority of the people that I engage with us, there's nothing to celebrate the castle. How do you celebrate people who are impaled on the front courtyard, or people who are mutilated, or dead, or that was it? So it's that balance. So we have to be careful that if we don't celebrate and commemorate the brick and mortar, and colonial conquest, and the institutions that were built there, in a better balanced way. Otherwise, we'll find a slip in the middle of the issue of xenophobia or even programs around xenophobia. So in our engagement, in the build-up, we look at the balance way. So historians like Dan Clay and Nigel Ward, also now mixed with people of the Khoisan or the Jewish group, etc. So that we have a balanced way around that. So coming to commercialization, we are careful. We have just completed commercialization study. It will be chapter 3 of our ITMP, which we will, as soon as the board approves it, we will deal with that. But one of the immediate implications or recommendations that we've implemented, we will increase gain by 10% in the first year, immediately, simply by putting a reliable point of sales that will, you know, that online offering all those opportunities to people will immediately check that. If we look at one of the elements of the commercialization study is the real valuation of the rent of venues. When we are seeing, there's only one person that's renting space from the castle that's close to commercial rates in that area. You know, we have the CKMA building offices, we have many other facilities. So if we correct that, we increase our $2 million of rental income, we'll increase it in year one. If that's correct. And of course, we say it's not a big one. We need to obviously now engage stakeholders who are one with us. So we will increase that to 400% immediately. And that's only working with existing tenants that we have on the site. We're not talking about when the spaces are renovated, how those opportunities of responsible commercialization will take the ball game. So the committee is right. The current moment we're sitting at 7 million in part is because we are, and I'm happy and confident, and the board is confident that we can run the institution with our current mandate at that. But the kind of aspirations that we have of really reaching out to what the Taj Mahal or the Louvre in France, but those kind of benchmark heritage institutions are doing, we will definitely need to up our ball game. And total sustainability is impossible if we don't have support from the DMD for an innovation. I think we must be very clear about that. We can't expect, well, unless we change from our current charges of 30 rand per adult to 300 rand per adult, we can't expect the paying visitor or event goer or phone company to be entirely responsible for the upkeep of the brick and mortar as we see it there. And I would recommend the 1.5. The 1.5 is probably the win rate for a property like this, but for a 350-year-old building that was built with Table Mountain, sandstone, and with Robben Island split, and with crushed shelves from Robben Island and from the coastline, it's going to get the same building. So, but more of that even. So I'm happy that our commercialization strategy is in place, and I will make that available to all honorable members. In terms of, I'll just go in the order that the chair has listed this issue. In terms of access, I think we are in good space. And part of what I commented at first about the meaning to different people of the castle is this reaching up to the castle campaign. What we did when we came in, we looked at all of the marketing objects. Where has castle been marketed? And we found that the castle has been marketed in a community or in sectors of the community who don't need that marketing. What we need, the marketing that we need is a very special, marketing of a special type. It's in the spirit of Palestine, and Australia and Younger and Springs in Bologna and Alexander that we needed that big hands-on marketing. And so instead of the normal above line marketing, what we've done is online, messaging, Facebook, Twitter, and also in community newspapers, media radio, so we use the below the line kind of marketing mediums available to us to do that. And how do you do that? You go simply knock on the doors. You create historical first of the castle that Sir Phil do write about here. Last year, 24th of September, we had in these two quarters 10,000 people. This is history. There's never been a recorded figure where 10,000 people on one day went through the doors of Gaza. Those people think it's impossible. But of course, it wasn't at once that those people were there. They were moving out of the other Egyptian museums to the other museums. But we recorded through ourselves, there was 10,000 people going through there. Media coverage of all NBC radio stations, all NBC TV stations. So if you are on an all NBC radio station, right countrywide, you're talking to an audience of 23 million. If you want all TV news stations, all of them, I'm talking about Nguni, all of them, talking about an audience, active audience of 7 million, which we can vary. Because if you look at incidents like the incident of xenophobia, there are more news, people looking at the news than previously speaking. But we can help you, scientifically to measure that. So in terms of access to the castle is open. It's a matter of how do you have meaningful access. People just can't come and listen to Jumbi or to, the tech or whatever. They need to be engaging with the corners of memory. Is this the entire site of memory? Every of the corners of memory. The place where this happened, the place where the Fakata was announced, the place where were conducted from, the places where particular announcements were, the places where interrogation took place. They need to engage with those places. In a meaningful way. So the 300 years, we will show you the program. It's a program that's not our own. We engage in a month a year. The Department of Military Veterans with the Deputy Minister in front is really taking this sincerely and taking it forward. Then in terms of our critical post, we have registered critical appointments, and in 1 year we lost. One at the end of the important critical post, we will actually be there. And I've spoken about the Department of Integrated Management State that will help us get the optimum structures to deliver our team. But I am happy, although it's lots of pressure currently, that we're in fact doing that. If we have those two critical positions filled very soon, which is a multi-implementer team and a heritage officer, then I'm sure we will be okay in terms of that. I've talked about the 10 million hits and the methods that we use. We've used what we call AES, advertising very equivalent to methodology, where we have an independent media marketing company to do that for us from Mojambique. So that we take the subjective element away from ourselves, and the audience general is quite happy with it. Consultancy, yes, that allow us to see if, oh, because we deal with the consulting, there's just two deals about it, how we work with the surface funding. But in terms of consultancy, what you see is very limited. Limited to where I don't think the board would be prudent to now appoint a lawyer to deal with the HR issues and the other issues. High level civilization in everything where we don't have to appoint it. I did illegals and such, stars and such. If we don't get it from them, then we will go out. But whenever we go out, we obviously are very interested in the WBE to do scorecard and to whether we include SMMEs into that. So I'm happy that the consultants that we have, which we don't often pay for, but those who do pay for, do this or do the transfer scheme. For instance, the people who develop our new website, and we will also be a launch very soon, we've asked them to take two of our staff members to the behind, you know, the back door of the website, where you can have your password, go in, and do updates on the internet. So we don't rely on them and their hourly rates to charge us to do those updates. Like, for instance, nobody's doing up to those and take a cell phone that will break out like this. And we need an update, we come from the consultant and say, listen, we have changed our web page because it's insensitive to the agency. So that we have. Because if we don't go, the Center for Women's Studies is a very interesting thing. I could keep this up in two discussions. The last discussion was in the Dutch Center for Community Heritage Studies when I was in July in Amsterdam. And how they are willing to transfer skills to this side. But I was also having a discussion with Gary Clay and some of the heritage officers at professors at UCT, and they said, we don't have to have an international link to Canada, but we have enough strong Eastern Heritage Department to start that thing here. And even if you start a series of seminars and just discussions on it, because you don't suddenly want to take the colonial material that's in the archives and bring it back to Canada. So we can bring it back. Citizens can carry some of those things because there are people who perhaps are intimidated to go to the archives, but then they can, through digitalization, and these are screens where you can go through my family, Newfoundland, how can I go into there, maybe I went to the first shipwreck, and whatever, you can go in there. So we're definitely dealing with that thing, and with your context and connections, and we need all kinds of ideas to get things up and running. Because the space is there to do it. And we have quite unique collections in our own position in terms of colonial architects that can start this thing like Chiplock, we've answered that, we've answered the SME, I've answered that. Manda, can you quickly talk about the surplus? Oh, I've never spoken about the surplus. Sorry. So just in conclusion, I think if we run the organization as it is, I'm happy that we can sustain it for the next 15, 20 years and expand the mandate. But if you listen quite to what Chief Locke is saying about this endowment properties and about the legislative change and expanding that you can include other similar properties that link to the castle, because why do you need an act for the castle only? Why do you have an open island act or Table Mountain Act? Or a what is it, some boost group for a four-linear act? Why do you have one act to deal with all of them? Land battery, why do you have all of them? If those changes come, then we will change our operation model. I'm happy with the human resources, with the income that we get from gate taking, from homing, from events, from all of it. I think I didn't in particular answer all of those questions, but I'm sure that we have a whole ton of issues, and so far so good.
Thank you very much. You're done, General.
I think we're done. There's something that left out. I think we got in for a lot.
Okay, we'll move to the UMBAT. Okay. Yeah, I understand there is a meeting of chairpersons and groups. So the And this is a matter of life and death on our staff. But I think the basic questions have been asked. If there are further questions, we can send them to them. Thank you very much, General. And good luck. We can now go to the Umbat, the General Mechanism. Remember, honorable members, we have to speak to the presentation yesterday, but due to our circumstances, this did not reflect. Now, today, if we engage, there's something that we should sign, agreement and so on. Now, we send the chief to make a presentation. Over to you, Director.
Thank you very much, Chair and members of the committee.
If you can just quietly leave, otherwise the Chief Director continues with the presentation.
Thank you, Chair, for conveying the apology on behalf of General Hackman, who is a liaison with us on official business. But he felt that he needed to proceed in front of the committee. And that is why we are here in a slightly diminished capacity. And we hope we can be able to take you through the presentation that we have. I have with me a team. Next to me is Mr. Mahalimele. Mr. Mahalimele is the Chief of Corporate Support in the office. Next to him is Ms. Annelise Velkamoos. Ms. Velkamoos is the planner for the office, and of course, as you already said, Chair, I'm Mr. George Gell, the Chief Director responsible for operations of the office. Chair, I'm sure the presentation has already been circulated. It's quite a big document. We tried to be as comprehensive as we could and as but we have seen in consulting and we've been observing the interactions and other inputs that came before us. In the manner that we will be presenting you today, we will try not to take you through each and every slide, but we will try and do it in a very summarized way. But the members of the committee are free to draw our attention to specific slides if there is a specific issue that you like to raise. And of course, Chair, I need to say to the committee that stating the obvious. You will appreciate that this is our first time ever tabling documents like this. It may be that there may be errors, there may be shortcomings. Although we do not with them, we call upon for your understanding that it's our first time and we did our best to comply with all the guidelines and fire permission. Chair, with your permission, I would like to invite Mr. Mahalimele, the Chief of Corporate Support, to take us through the presentation.
The aim of the presentation is to brief the portfolio committee on the company's efforts on the strategic plan, the ATT, and the allocated budget of the Office of the Military Ombudsman. And Chair, in terms of the strategic plan, the scope is as indicated. And the scope continues. And the vision of the office is a well-leading, independent, and impartial military ombuds institution. And our mission is to provide an independent, impartial, and efficient complaint resolution process for serving and former members of the ANGF and public to promote good government. And our values are accountability, confidentiality, commitment, impartiality, professionalism, and integrity. And our constitutional and legislative mandate is the Military Act itself, Military Ombuds Act itself. And the situational analysis. The office of the military ombudsman was established in 2012 in terms of the military ombudsman for 2012 to investigate complaints by members, former members, which may be presented in lodging a complaint, as well as family members on behalf of the member of the SANDF in respect of their conditions of service. Members of the public may also lodge a complaint regarding the official conduct of a member of the SANDF. The office functions independently from the SANDF. Chair, the following documentation were consulted, collected and examined to determine the economic, social and political data that will affect the office. The National Development Plan, the Medium-Term Strategic Framework 2016-2020, the New Growth Plan, the 2014 State of the Nation Address, the MOD and MP Delivery Agreements, OPAC, National Security Strategy, and the MOB and MD Priorities for Europe 15-20.
That is OPAC.
With the forum of the Director General. And the performance of environment plan. With the formalization of the and the incorporation of the military role, the office is brought from a complaint-driven organization to an investigation-driven organization. The process undertaken during the strategic planning cycle included an assessment of the internal and external operational environment within which the office of the military role finds its manager. Some of the key challenges imperatives identified during the process were the need to reposition the office as a Schedule 3 public entity to achieve institutional independence from the DOD, the need to amend the Ministerial Act to address the accountability and governance framework, the need for affecting or for effective, durable, systemic change in promotion of good government and strengthening military democracy emerged as another important change imperative. Internally, key areas of focus emerged as improvements such as automated business systems, capable, motivated personnel, and creation of positive disciplined organizational culture. Organizational environment. Based on the international best practices, the current organizational structure of the office was developed and submitted to the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans during June 2012. The approved structure of the military ombudsman consists of two primary functional lines, namely operation management and corporate support. The total number of posts approved and captured is 89, of which 66% focus on delivering the core business, which is operations management. And so this is the organizational structure overview. Have the office of the military ombudsman, the deputy ombudsman, and the two arms of indicated corporate support and corporate operation. As a strategic planning process, Chair, the military ombudsman office remains committed to adhere to the government's medium-term strategic framework, as well as national principles for planning, budgeting, and reporting. The strategic map continues to inform the organization's planning process and instrument across all levels within the office. This strategic priorities will enable subsequent organizational planning instruments, strategic budgeting, monitoring and evaluating, and risk management functions. The acquisition of these priorities will enhance the effective realization of the digital roadmap mandate through a strategically focused organization supported by and within available resources. Informed by the logical framework planning methodology, the strategic objective is collectively to generate the desired impact for the realization of the organizational vision. These are supported by strategies which are further evolved into programs, with each program strategy geared at generating the output and outcomes that will collectively achieve the given strategic objective. The third strategic objective is ensuring strategic direction to the office of the Minister of Rwanda in line with government intent and expectations. The second objective being the enhancement and maintenance of corporate cooperation within the office of the Minister of Rwanda. The third one is the administration of Minister of Rwanda resources as prescribed by the regulatory framework. In support of the government and minister of defense, the minister of veterans intent and outcome 12, the minister of the outcome is fairly and expeditiously resolved complaints. And the outcome statement is that this will be achieved through an independent, impartial, expeditious investigation and finalization of finalization process for complaints from members and former members of the ANDF relating to terms and conditions of service, and for complaints from members of the public relating to the official conduct of the members of the ANDF. The strategic the program purpose is to provide political direction for the DOD to ensure democratic health of South Africa by meeting the requirements of defense commitments and providing appropriate defense capabilities. The Minister of Ombud sub-program purpose is to investigate and ensure that complaints are resolved in a fair, economical and expeditious manner. The SASAP program, the Minister of Ombud strategic direction, the responsibility of the Ministry of Ombud Direction, risk analysis and training, monitoring and evaluation of reporting, regulation framework and policy development. And the corporate operations, the intake, analysis and investigation of complaints, outreach, communication and corporate branding, legal services, research and development, and corporate support, human resource management and development, financial management, information, communication and
The following slide speaks to the output of the office, and I think we've already spoken to those in terms of strategic direction, in terms of corporate operations, and in terms of the administration support that comes from corporate support. I don't think I should waste your time by taking you through each and every one of them. And the following slide shows, if again, the performance measure and the measurable outputs of the office, one of them being the percentage of written complaints finalized, the submission of newsroom with annual report to the executive, you will recall that in terms of the act, for each year we are supposed to submit an annual report to reflect the activities of the office. And of course, we have to submit documents that we are thinking about today, the annual performance plan and the strategic plan. Slide 15 and 17 is the policy that should govern the activity of the office. And the next one relates to the percentage of compliance to national statutes, like the power, like the public finance management act, which requires us to comply with certain specific 10 guidelines and the compliance with the overall organizational requirements. Again, we measure ourselves in terms of the complaints that are received as against the complaints that were able to finalize within a particular financial year. In terms of legal services, again, measurement is the degree to which timely, effective, and efficient legal services are provided to the office of the municipal. And we have communication which takes care of our branding and improves our communication ability. We have already indicated that we have within the support environment and HR components. Again, there we, within the finance section, we speak to the percentage of the compliant allocated budgets. Within the environment of logistics and supply chain management, again, we measure ourselves in terms of the percentage of compliance with allocated logistic budgets. With regard to IT, we speak to the issues of percentage of downtime versus connectivity. In respect of security, we look at the number of security breaches within the office. Now I proceed to move to slide 22, which speaks to resource considerations. Two primary considerations in this respect are identified. One relates to personnel expenditure. Mr. Mahalmele has already indicated that our structure provides for 49 points. For the survey of each of skills, I think this number may slightly change in the new intake. We have a couple of people who joined us from the beginning of that semester. So that is really the major area of expenditure for the office. It is again expected to say that in the few slides that has passed, we spoke about our legislation in the city three entities. We foresee there that we may have to engage services of external consultants to assist the office to transition from being an entity under the DOG to an independent entity in terms of PSMA Schedule 3. Lastly, the IT consideration relates to the development and procurement of an automated case management and case and matter management system. I think in the last presentation that we did to the committee, we indicated the challenges that we have in terms of not having an IT case management system. We're currently using a manual system which makes it difficult to draw statistics at the right time when you want to do your presentation and when you want to report to Parliament. With the certain amount of cost shares and new office, we have a challenge with regard to the implementation and the maintenance of the local area network. Currently, we are very much relying on the DOD to provide support in that to CMI. But recently we have entered into a service level agreement with CISA. We are hoping to be able to source their services directly to assist the office of the local area network. Under risk management, shall we identify a couple of risks, one of them being the fact that the Ministry of Act does not address the accountability framework. And I think again we dealt with the issue when we appeared before the committee in March, that there is a challenge in terms of the limitations that the Act imposes on the office, more especially when it comes to issues of governance and accountability. Our budget still comes to us through DOG, and therefore the Service for Defense remains the accounting officer for the office. And all our processes that we follow the DOG procurement processes are taken by the community. The second risk, which is linked to what I've just said, is the issue of independence. What extent does that symbiosis between our office and that of the DOE affect the independence that we seek to project? And of course, again, we raise the issue of the case and matter management system, which is covered in the activities of the office. And again, the big issue is the issue of the relocation of the office. Currently, the office that we are having was based on the personnel that was there at the time, but since we began to bring in new staff, it has become critical that we find the appropriate space that is able to accommodate all the staff that are there in the office. I proceed, Chair, I do not think it's necessary, Chair, to speak to our slides 25, 26, 27. These are just links to all the other things that we have in terms of capital plans, human resource plans, ICT master plans, and criminality plans. With your permission, therefore, Chair, I would like to proceed to slide number 28. We speak to service delivery improvement plan. Again, we indicate that the office is in the process of combining the service delivery improvement plan in line with the prescribed by GPFA. The office has no conditional grant. We have no public entities that are reporting to us. There are no grants of state reporting to us. We currently have no registered public-private partnerships with any other organization. And again, sir, we go back to the issue of the consultant utilization. We have indicated that with this transition from where we are to an independent office, and it has been identified that the consultant may have a right to assist the department in the office with that transition. But all the necessary consultations internally with the accounting office will have to take place and see if we will be granted the necessary permission to do so. Chair, that brings us to the end of our annual performance plan. moving to the strategic plan, to the annual performance plan. Now, Chair, you may have noticed the presentation that we had that there are a number of overlaps between the two documents. And what we have tried to do in this presentation was not go back to the issues of mission and vision, and just speak to the new items that were not reflected under the current strategic plan. Again, the strategic overview, Chair, speaks to the vision, mission, etc., and we decided not to repeat those that I've already mentioned. Again, the issue of links to our plan, we are not going to speak to it particularly because it's the issue that has already been covered. Which then, Chair, moves me to slide number 33. Updated performance delivery environment for 2016 up to 2018. We speak to the issue of corporate governance and accountability, and again, Chair, I have already gone to town on how we intend to improve corporate governance and accountability within the office. And we suspect that this may require specific amendments from the legislation that governs the office. But again, that's a consultation process that is received from the office to the Minister of Defense and ultimately. I've already spoken to the development of the service delivery improvement plan in line with the GPFA prescriptions. I've already spoken to the development of building modernized or ICT capacity. I've already spoken that our supply chain management processes are still those of the DOD. And therefore, we give our best in terms of all the guidelines to comply with the DOD processes, to comply with the National Security Prescriptions in respect of all those. In terms of the post-establishment, Chair, again, I've already spoken to the structure of the office. Our number one is the office, of course, is the military on board, created a level of 16, but remunerated at the level of the High Court Judge. Again, we are using the terminology of the public service. In terms of saying it's a level of 16, but he's the head of the institution and he's remunerated at the level of the High Court. Under him, we have a deputy manager on board, and the standard, again, we use the public service standard, we refer to the level of 15, and the standard within the number of programs of state is that he will be entitled to 85% of the remuneration of the head of the institution. And then we will have the rest of us within those from salary level 14, we have one post, which is director of operations. We have 8 posts at level 13, we have 23 posts at level 4, which is deputy director, and we have one level 11, which is again deputy director. We have 18 posts at the level of assistant director level 10, level 9 and level of an assistant director level 9, and we have 7 and level 8. Salary level 7, we have 2, 6, we have 4, 5, we have 12, and 4, we have 1. In total, that will give you 89 posts that are provided for construction. Now they have real discussion within the officers where we should decide all the available posts. And I think the decision at the moment was that it's not necessary at the moment. We're monitoring the case load, we're monitoring the complaints, and the decision as to the future staffing will be informed very much by the number of complaints that we'll see. We don't see a need at this moment to complete all the investigation teams that we need to have in terms of the approved structure. In terms of services to be scaled down, share, we indicate that there are no services to be continued to scale down. There are no new proposed outputs other than the issue with the weather rail also the three public entities. For 2015-16, we have identified a couple of outputs that need to be improved with the transition to the Schedule 3, and these are the issues that relate to issues of governance and compliance, the procurement function, the chief financial officer. And these are all currently support that we are receiving directly from the DOD, but within our structure is no provision. But within good transition, that capacity will actually look within, and of course that will affect the issue of budget, more especially the Asia budget. But this is the time we want to go into and see what exactly are the financial implications, what are the organizational implications. Chair, again, if you allow me, I do not intend to deal with slide number 7. In the sense that it seems to repeat the process that is applicable to all departments in terms of planning, budgeting, and reporting, and risk management. Again, the process method, the strategy method is set in slide number 38. It reflects the two strategic objectives that were already identified in terms of strategic direction, in terms of corporate operations, in terms of corporate support. So I therefore don't think we should go into that unless there is a specific question. Again, Chair, when it goes to outputs and tempos, it takes us back to the outputs that are already discussed in terms of fair and expeditious resolution of complaints. And again, speaks to the strategic direction of the office, corporate operation, and corporate support. So if you allow me, Chair, again, I will skip slide number 39 and slide number 40. And move to the next page. Again, to the repetition of the targets of the performance indicators that we've already spoken on in terms of the strategic business plan. And we set our 5-year target. It's the same with the legal services, Chair, it's the same with communication, it's the same with our HR capacity, it's still the same in terms of financial management within the office. And it's the same with slide 46 in terms of supply chain management and logistics. And again, lastly, it's the same in terms of ICT, the same issue that we have already raised as to what is it that things should be changed. Again, in terms of security, the number of security breaches that have been identified, in terms of the policies that have to be developed for the office, in terms of the planning and risk management. Sorry, Chairman. I think I have to keep my finger on it. So, Chair, all of those are the same. So is slide number 50 in terms of percentage of complaints submitted versus complaints finalized within a particular quarter and within a particular financial year. Chair, if you will allow me, I will just proceed to slide number 57. Slide number 51, 52, 53, 54, 55, 56 is just a repetition of all the targets that we have already spoken to under the strategic business plan. So we now move to slide number 57, Chair, which sets out the allocated budget of the office. You will see that the full cost is reflected there is around 46.8 million. The budget amount that is allocated under full cost will reflect the requirement, and the budget amount is what has been allocated. and then you will know that the fund variation of about 5 points, of about 5 million. This large share has to do with the case and matter management system that we spoke about earlier on, that we have to develop that. So that gap between what is allocated and what is required is largely due to the cost of the new ICT case management system. And then share on slide number 58, again we give you the current allocation and we show and reflect all the requirements of the office. And then you will see, if you look under 1516, you will reflect that what you want. Put 1.8, then set out what the requirements are for the office. And I need to point out, share, that for slide number 60, there is a slight error there in terms of the figures that you may have before you. The total at the bottom of that slide number 60, it should reflect 41.8 million as opposed to 35.9. So there is an error there, Chair. We apologize. Chair, if I may proceed to slide number 61. Slide number 61 again, Chair, speaks to the sub-programs that we have already spoken to in terms of the strategic direction of the office, corporate operations of the office, and the resource support that we get from the corporate support of our office. And again, we go to the same issue of transition to Schedule 3 and what the implications of those would be in terms of the finances and the impact of the budget. And of course, again, we reflect the 5 million deviation we have reflected for you under the budget allocation is due to the development of the data matter management system. Again, shared from slide number 64, 65, 66, it again links the annual performance plan to the other plans that we have in office in terms of ICT, HR, logistics, and supply chain management. So I do not deem it necessary, Chair, to go through those, except to highlight again that one of the biggest costs that we anticipate in the near future is the issue of the relocation of the office from where we are to the new premises. That procurement process is ongoing and is being managed through the department. Chair, that brings us to the end of the presentation. Like we said, Chair, we decided not to repeat any items that we have already spoken to under the strategic business plan. But of course, members of the committee are free, if there is a specific slide that they would like to draw our attention to, we can go there and start working. And I think that, Chair, that is our story. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Umbat, another member, indeed, this is the first time that Umbat is presenting the strategic plan, the annual performance plan, incorporates the goods as one thing. Our government is doing it differently. That's why you keep on repeating yourself. And the budget allocation. Are there any questions of clarity by the members?
Thank you, Uncle Chair. First of all, congratulations to the department for an excellent document that you presented as a first. And we'd like to acknowledge the effort that has gone into it. Compared to some other departments that have been in existence for a number of years, I think they've done extremely well. Yeah. Coming to the question one, I think from last presentation we had earlier in the year, of course the military explained to us the position and what they have reached and the changes to legislation to give more credibility and integrity to the institution. Now, essentially that means that they would like to move the status to a Schedule 3 public entity, which has serious financial implications in terms of the ABOT position, the critical post that needs to be done, and also the documents that need to be prepared. I'd just like to know if this consultation has taken place with the minister, and to what extent is there an agreement, because as the document is moving ahead, it seems that if the fate of the country, we must now execute and continue now getting all the necessary issues in place so that we can process it. So I'd just like to know that, and then of course that has an impact immediately on the legislation itself, the military itself, and the gaps within that legislation. Have all those that have been addressed, and of course we requested that information ought to be forwarded to the committee to understand all the necessary changes that will be introduced now from the Uber Deck. The other one I'd like to ask is the CMS, the CMMS, was supposed to be based in that management system, which is going to cost about 5 million rand. Has that also been put out already for tender or request for proposal so that we understand where that cost has come from and how it was actually calculated? And of course, the military input reports to the minister on this matter, and it has also been concurrence in this regard. So legislative amendments, and of course Schedule 3 issue, the repositioning of it, and affecting the independence and accountability. The other one is of course the issue of the Department of the Military Ombud Complaints of Court with Financial Resources in terms of its planning. But I want to ask the question, Honourable Chair, if the DPSA has to agree to these, what we call the personnel structure. Now all the posts, the 89 posts, are these funded posts. If they're not funded posts, then we must ask how many posts are being funded out of the 89. At this moment, only 47 posts have been filled. And we can see the performance of this department at 50%, although there's an indication from the military ombud that they can cope with complaints. Clearly 50% is a serious underperformance of dealing with complaints of members of the African Defence Force, former and present. So I'd like to know why only 47 people have been appointed. Going forward, only 15 will be appointed in the new financial year and 5 in the next year, which makes up 67, and 22 posts will still remain not filled. Now I understand that the military ombud wants to change its status to a Schedule 3 status and therefore look maybe at the restructuring of its personnel so that they can accommodate those changes. In terms of the Schedule 3 issue, I think we need to get an understanding. How does this impact on the 89? If 3 critical posts have only been noted for the change to happen, and that we look at about 3 million rand increase on those on budget. So the vacancy rate at this moment does impact on the performance of this institution. And that needs to be addressed because I think we are extremely unhappy with responses from the department already to complaints from military vets that we don't get responses, and of course if the military ombud is another recourse that we have that we can go to for assistance, this is definitely not enough. I am sitting with files on my desk which I promised General Antimer to hand over to him, and those files at the moment, basically I'm looking at about 500 files to hand over. So I would like to know how is this going to be dealt with, because I'm having a problem with the department. And if the military ombud can't assist, then just add to the problem and the frustration of military vets. The other one I want to raise is the issue of, it's a complaint-driven and investigation-driven organization. Complaint-driven, we can understand that people complain and you can't resolve it. But when you investigate, it means you need to put more resources into that investigation. And therefore, it speaks to the issue of HR. It doesn't make sense that we have 47. And we want to be considered an investigative organization. Where we put resources, people go and find answers on issues and go to the people that are complaining. So I have a serious concern that this department is not in sync with what it plans and with what it has as resources. The other one I have is also the issue of the dispute resolution. How is it, because all policy in this moment is reported to the DOD, and what is, of course, you know, the DOD has got its own policies as well. How exactly is this dispute resolution policy being designed, and what issues does it address? I haven't seen a copy of that, but I'd like to know how does the military ombud deal with that issue. The automated business systems that are indicated in the science and also in the AVP, etc., what are the cost attached to the automated systems, the business systems that we are talking about? The other one I'd like to raise is the complaint target of 50%, and many of the other targets I've got a concern that on the one hand we fully comply 100% with precepts of National Treasury and with requirements, etc. But on the other hand we speak about 70% performance, 50% performance, 60% performance. What does it really mean? If we say on one hand we comply and on the other hand we are performance is really, really poor. And I would like to know the issue of the 70% when we say the finalized and not finalized complaints. there's a thought that I've said that is it not finalized or the finalized one that we're speaking of? Well, if it is the non-finalized, then it's 30% cheaper. And this also contrary to the outcome one of the military umrah, which says that we will deal with complaints expeditiously. It's contrary to outcome one. When we are dealing at a 50% rate and it's a delay, the response and resolution to these matters, it cannot be expeditious. And if it's complaint driven and really not investigative driven, then I've got a way. The security breaches that goes down, which is expected, but now to have an idea of what are the security breaches that are being addressed this year, the 48 that are mentioned. Then I'd like to know the issue of the public entity registration, that two consultants will be appointed at 1.2 million over a 6-month period, which says that 100,000 per month is given to each individual, and that equates to plus minus 5,000 rand per day. Now, what does that entail? And secondly, in government, there is a precedent being set. A number of public entities are registered as Schedule 3 entities. Have we consulted with our counterparts in the other line departments that have such a public entity that report to them? And they can actually facilitate and assist us and can be cut back on the cost. Why is this military ombud looking at? And secondly, the registration process, how has that been calculated, and has a RFP been issued? A request for proposal or a tender being put out for people to respond to for us to get to the figure of 1.2 million for 6 months. Honourable Chair, I think the issue of the downtime is indicated at 70%. Now, certainly we need to look at if a government has to operate, then it has to put the UPS in place. Uninterrupted power supply. And for a 4-hour power supply, depending on the size of the building, but we can start anything from 50,000 right up to 500,000 to or one. But we are looking at our services. How will the services be impacted and what measures have been investigated in terms of UPS to ensure that we are actually working and when it's downtime or ESCOM or whatever, that our work is not interrupted. Because it's interrupted if you go to those 3 and even plus a day. And if it's once a day, it's 2 hours to 4 hours, and it can get minimum 2 hours. So we're sitting with the problem of if there's no profit productivity, it will be a serious loss to the government to pay officials that cannot work because the systems are down or there's no shedding happening and impacts on our performance. So I'd like to know what measures are in place to address and intervene in the case of such things happening. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Can we have your response?
Thank you very much, Chair. I will attempt to answer some of the questions, and I will invite Mr. Mahalia to speak some. I think the next question related to how far is the consultation process, both with the ministry and the other departments, in terms of trade three strategy. We initiated the process yesterday. The document was prepared and submitted to our minister, who then submitted it to National Treasury. We had meetings with both National Treasury and follow up to that submission, with both National Treasury and DPRA. A lot of issues were discussed and concerns were raised, and the number of red flags were raised in terms of what the impacts of such a strategy would be in terms of financial and in terms of national budget. Now, one particular concern that they have raised was that there has to be a balance between your operating budgets and your agent budgets. And that also has an impact on the balance of the post that you have already created. It may be that in future, if you proceed with a schedule 3, like one of the members indicated, it may not be necessary to complete all the three orders, and therefore some of them may have to be converted to accommodate the three, some of the three goals we have just identified, of the CFO, of the GRC, and of procurement office. So there is that consideration, one of the issues that I have raised, that it may be prudent in this capacity that you first do a proper time and see how is it going to impact, what are the new posts you will need, whether the available posts can be converted to accommodate those without increasing the budget. So those discussions are taking place. And of course, there was a benchmarking that's taking place with other institutions like the government, the insurance customer, the public protector, the pension fund, the educator, and all other sister organizations that exist in the country to look at their structure and how they value people independent from their parent fund. But of course, that is a very delicate and scientific process that has to be undertaken by future people of funding. Hence the issue of consideration of a consultant to do a proper study, because it's an issue that ultimately only the surgeon and DPFA has to deal with all the information and reflect on the financial information for them to make a decision. So that's why we are raising the issue of a consultant that it may have to be done by an independent person, because of course the other concern that was raised was whether the office staff will be the right people to conduct that study, because they need a certain level of independence in terms of how they are advised about all the implications that will arise from that service. So that process has already been initiated, and we are hoping to take it further this year. And hopefully, if we are given the permission to get a consultant to do that feasibility study and that implication, we can be able to wrap that correct up within the next couple of months. On the issue of legislative changes that are existed, I think the primary issue that bothers us, if indeed we proceed with the schedule 2 service, there are obviously key implications in terms of how we are funded the funding. Currently, the law said we will be funded through the defense goals. But if we follow this schedule 2 entity process that we are in the stage, it means that particular aspect dealing with the funding of the office may have to be amended. There are issues that we have highlighted in the last presentation that relates to the issue of own initiative investigation. Because we are saying our vision is to move from being complaints driven to investigation driven. But largely now, the law that governs us restricts to being initiated. Any investigation must first be initiated by a complaint. You may hear on the news that we have used in a particular place, but the Ministry of Health cannot just up and go there and do an investigation without a complaint. So we find that the city, so that's the second aspect that the thing should be addressed. And of course, if we become an independent organization, again, the issue of whether the Ministry of Ombud becomes the accounting officer, the law must be very clear in terms of that. And at the moment, we don't even have that capacity. And that's why we are raising the issue of the chief financial officer, because if you become an accounting officer, you need the necessary capacity within the office. If you need to have your own procurement processes, you will need a person to be responsible. Of course, there are all issues of accountability, government, and compliance that we have to be accountable. The next question related to the case and matter management system, whether it has been put on its desk. No, it has not. The specification that we developed, like I indicated during the presentation, was just recently signed a service level agreement with CETA. The specification informed by our requirements will then now be fed into CETA. Then she can look at it, then develop the RFP based on the requirement that the office is having. Then it will be managed by CETA through the normal procurement process. But at this stage, not ours. I think I've already dealt with the issue of the structure change. What will be the impact of the schedule 3? We anticipate that it will have an impact on the current structure that we have. Some posts may have to be accommodated. We need the courts as opposed to creating new courts. So if we agree that the workload that we have and the number of investigations means that were envisaged at the time do not match, it may be that available courts will be utilized for that purpose without insisting the budget. But of course that is subject to fact that has been done in that. I have dealt with the issue of complaints driven records investigation, the dispute resolution process. Policy that we are speaking about. I'm sure the Honourable Member will appreciate that as a new office, there is a lot of groundwork that has to be done in terms of what processes we follow in dealing with the complaint. Now, the law gives us two mandates, if I was to use the word. One is to investigate the complaint, but the other is to employ mediation, conciliation, and sort of arbitration to resolve the complaint. So in other words, not every complaint that we receive necessarily require a full-blown investigation. In fact, most of them will evolve them through the alternative distinct commission. And then when the parties together in the office and have a discussion with them, and then end. By the end of the day, we have a solution to the problem. The government has agreed to do certain things and the employee has agreed to do certain things. But we believe that we need to formalize that in terms of the policy as opposed to an ad hoc process that we follow, depending on the circumstances. We think there should be a document that is developed by the entire office. Have we consulted with other public entities? I think I've already addressed that question, that we have done benchmarking with all the other sister organizations that I think we can ask. We are consulting with Treasury, we are consulting with people. And the reason is that further consultation is still to be done to get to a point where we want to be. At this point, Chair, I would like to invite Mr. Makhalibene to speak to the other three questions that relate to the whether all the goals that we have are currently funded. The second one relates to the business systems, automated business systems that we are referring to. And the last one, I think, will relate to the security breaches. Those are the two questions. Give your question.
That's it, Mahalia. You're welcome. Okay.
In terms of the age of schools that are funded, we follow the process that in terms of the total allocation, first place is to make sure that we make provision for funding of the schools that we need to fill in that particular period. For instance, in the 15-16, the schools that were identified for filling has been funded, yes, the funding. It means currently we're taking from now the operating budget, we move it to the other budget to satisfy that requirement. So the goals are in this funded in that maybe I should draw the committee's attention to the first that not much history the proof of the office where we can draw a good year at this point and that is learned from. We are now in the third year and we now learning as we go with right now we're beginning now to plan now the full cost which has never come through. What is the full cost? What is the requirement? And we now in a place where we can say there's a delta between what is allocated and what is required, which now has a relationship to the budget, the HR budget itself, because this will increasingly take away from the operating budget to the HR budget within the operations. But now, in terms of that history not being there, or the world found of history not being there, or said how much is required in the operating budget, that delta is not there. But that delta is now becoming to emerge, that this is what we need in terms of our operations. So now, our planning is now shifted and happening. And in terms of the security bridges, that have been violated. The building is accessed through a biometric system. The bulk of the security bridges relate to instances where they're tailgating. What do I mean by that? The person in front will open and then the person coming behind, because they are shaping, the person coming from behind doesn't put their finger on the head and then they just come in. And that causes the security breach. Another breach is in the form of maybe people living with their laptops without declaring that they want to take their laptops with
for what that means. But the committee gave both this reason. We have embarked now on periodic awareness campaign in terms of the HIV virus, so that people can, so that staff can begin to appreciate the impact of not complying with the security measures we can hold. And in terms of the committee member inquired about the UPS. Mr. Jidel earlier on indicated that we currently in the process of relocating to a new office. And as part of the requirement, we insisted that there has to be a generator, for instance, and actually uninterrupted power supply that comes with the new building. Because currently we don't have that. When there's outages, then we continue with the program. And we can't track it now in the current building because we're in the process of relocating.
So you are at an office? That's an office in Korea. Then we may have to go and visit that office. When we go to military veterans, I think we should also go to the UMBAT. We have to arrange. And thank you very much.
Follow-up.
Okay, follow-up, Honorable.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just a short follow-up. I'd just like to know clearly if the DPS normally signs off on the complement of personnel. And once they've agreed that it's fund post, then there's a transfer that must take place to the military. And it means it covers all the posts. If they say it's 47 out of 89, I think 47 people can be appointed and money in the account. If they say it's 89, then there should be money in the account for the employees. So I just wanted to be very clear, is what is actually the funded posts that are being paid for and transferred money for the Indian military? And also we want to get on slide 34. 34,000 are the number of posts, and it is tabulated at 89. And going ahead, I still see 89, 89, 89, which simply tells me it's 89 funded posts. Now, it doesn't make sense to me that we try to only employ 47 people and hold on to the money because we want to use it elsewhere. Then it doesn't address the issue of funded posts. And that would be not really in order. That would be irregular. If one is shifting or putting other commitments in place of the appointment of employees to run the military unit and it's used for other operational purposes, that will be irregular because the committed monies are then not put in the right place. So I am concerned that I just want to have an answer. And secondly, I said here, on page 34, under the 123, the fourth group of posts at point B says, one team of investigators will not be charged. Even the post will be reconfigured for this. Now, I understand that. But how many people are really on the investigating team or on the team that might be able to complain specifically? How many people are actually dealing with the complaints that we only get an output of 50%? So I'd like to know if we can have some direct answers. And then, of course, I hear there is a budget for TNF as well. And it's a very small operation. And generally, people approach the top investigator-driven at this moment. It's only complaints-driven, which means people receive complaints, and they have to respond to it and liaise and negotiate with people. What is the TNH actually this for? Thank you very much.
So you filled in for the same post already?
Currently, no. If I may, with the new intake that now came in, now in April, first of April, we now stand in at 51.
How many of them are we in?
In terms of let me come back on that. You mean on this?
The first 51. How many percentage is women?
I want to say that I think that women are more than men in the parents, but I can't do that.
And the work that I'm doing is military veterans.
Yeah. The process that we follow is that we slim our boat through advertisement and general advertisement in newspapers, and then we attract the people from all over the place, you know, necessarily from the interesting
agenda equity, government policy.
Yes, in terms of filling the post, yes, gender equity, we follow gender equity, that's why current the fair assets is slightly ahead of the next.
So the top 149, democratic issue.
I indicated earlier on that the honorable member is correct that once PPA approved the structure, then the funding was approved. However, earlier on I indicated that because we are in the establishment mode, that history is not there. And the Department of Defense took cognizance of the fact that our feeling of the post is a standard approach. We will fill the next goal one. And funding will be made available as that happens. And because historically we didn't have the historical base where we could pay our operation minus the HR budget are X number of millions. We are now building that capacity of moving to that stage where we can pay our operations full cost this much. And once we are at that place, the defense will now make sure that they match that with our requirements. Because they take cognizance of the fact that we'll move towards 8-9 in a startup session. And that will be paid as well, as Mr. Jair and KK together, by the volume of work that is coming in. Whether ultimately we'll move through that 8-9 or not. I don't know if I catch that.
No, I appreciate that, that's fine.
Chair, you probably just the last slide, and maybe we need to reflect on what is contained in slide 34.
Mm-hmm.
Slide 34, what is intended to reflect on, but within that context, we do not intend to increase our capacity beyond the current impact. That's why you see the 1989. But it just reflects that there are no plans to increase the capacity. But the post that we have filled in our funds are, and the approach we are taking is that we will save this staffing structure over a period. So as we submit our budget requirements, if we think we need to find an extra head, we will make that requirement available to you. And it will be factored in and we will define it on the basis of that. But it doesn't mean all the 89 posts are currently funded. It means the current posts have been approved on the fact that the money for those posts will be saved in over the answer. So it gives us intended to reflect that we don't intend to increase beyond the 89 that have been approved. Even with the schedule 3, we are trying to play around depending on what happens in the next thing. We're trying to play around with the available posts and see if we don't go beyond what is already approved by the DPS. Hence the comment that the third team, we don't intend to see it until this whole study is done.
Well, thank you very much, and we have, I think we have come to the end of our
meeting. Just a clean this one, would you?
Chine. What is Chine?
their intersubstance, level intersubstance.
So the intersubstance.
Oh, it's empty. Trevor's up to the top of the drum.
No, but it's not the same thing. What about it? There was a question about it.
Even quite that, the one I remember feels a key that question.
What was the question? Another good question.
In terms of inverted allocation for SNT, if we can have an idea of how the ENT is actually or SNT is used. It is a very small operation for the 7 people at the moment, not 51.
SNT is used for investigation and for honoring meeting such as this one. And like Mr. Gisela indicated earlier on, we have benchmarking exercise, people benchmarking exercise to help us arrive at the exchange three or at the place that we want to be. In terms of investigation, it's in a case where members or complainants are outside Pretoria, sitting in Cape Town, in Natal, or anywhere in the country. And you have to interview those. Then investigators have to travel to those places to get information. That's how the SOC is extended.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think we'll come to the end of our meeting. The real engagement with you, Tatema Halumela, you don't raise your horses before they finish the race. So your next race will be the presentation of the quarterly report. And it's when that we decide as to whether we praise you or we don't praise you. Now, thank you very much.
Lash is prepared for members and yourself. Maybe we'll take you to the venue at Max Building across.
That's
it. Yeah. The committee laughs at this one. They do. I don't even like such manners.
We are
It's in the